continue today in our series from one chapter in the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 13. We are in week three of our series Back to School, focusing on two verses of Scripture, Hebrews chapter 13, verses 5 and 6. Keep your lives free from the love of money. Be content with what you have, for God said, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you. And we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid, for what can anyone do to me? This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. What is present consistently is what we will ultimately trust repeatedly. I don't know about you, but I remember very, very little about my very first day of school. I don't remember how we got to school, what vehicle we drove. I don't remember the classroom per se. I don't remember what we did. I don't remember what I had for lunch. In fact, I asked my mom this week, I said, do you remember what I wore the first day of school? She said, no, in fact, I don't remember what either of you wore. And then she said, oh, wait, no, I remember what your sister wore. So later she sent me this picture. I text back. I have to show this on the screen. And then I said, what preachers will try to do to connect with their people. Dot, dot, dot. You're welcome. None of you are showing me your school pictures. I love the high socks. That man, I was stylish. The bowl cut, oh yeah. Ironically, those are my two cousins. They're actually four of us in the same grade by the time we got to middle school. All right, you can take that down. Thanks, Mike. Mike! What I do remember is from the first day of kindergarten through the sixth grade, I remember this. I never once worried about lunch. Because every day, my mom would pack my lunch. I never thought throughout the day, I wonder if there will be food in there. I never got to the cafeteria and found that there wasn't anything in there to eat, and I never went hungry at school. And what I learned is that because I knew the hands that had provided, I could trust them. Because what was present consistently over time helped me to trust repeatedly, day by day, over and over again. Boy, there's a sermon in that, but I don't have time to preach it. When I got to middle school, things changed a little bit. She no longer packed my lunch. She gave me money. Every Sunday night, there would be $15 on the outside of my billfold. She didn't even put it in my wallet. Apparently, I was responsible for making sure I got it to school. Now, that amounted to about $3 a day. I have no idea what school lunches cost now, so... But I didn't have too bad a time learning to budget. You know, you'd go through the line, you'd get your tray, and you would maybe get a salad or maybe get the entree, or there's always a bag of chips available. I struggled at the very end of the line when I started to feel the cold air rise out of that beautiful cooler full of ice cream. And I quickly learned that in order to have lunch money for Friday, I couldn't get ice cream on Monday. I learned that in order to be able to say yes a few times later on, I had to say no many times in the present. You see, it was in the cafeteria, not in the classroom, that I learned my lesson in learning how to be content. But I tell you what, it's so easy to fall in love with the ice cream that you forget about the loving hands that provided it in the first place. Therefore, keep your wives free from the love of money. Now, we don't love money the way we love people. We don't take money and go to bed with it at night. We don't take money and just stare at it and say, "You are so beautiful, honey." We don't take money and put it at our dining room table and try and have a conversation with it. How is your day today? I see it's a dollar bill day, not a 20. We didn't do too good today, did we? We do not love money as a noun, a person, place, or thing. We love money as a verb, what money can do for the noun. We don't love money as the way we love a person. We love what money can do for us. Oh, the convenience that money can buy. Convenience stores, you know, when you don't have time and it's just convenient. But have you ever checked the prices at a convenience store, at a grocery store? You pay for convenience. Oh, if you have enough money, you can make anything in life easier. Work isn't as hard when you have money because you can pay somebody else to do it or you can buy the right tools. I'm preaching to the wives. Those honey-do projects, we need the right tool for the job. And the men said, yeah. That comes back on you though, men. Because for Christmas I bought Sarah one of those iRobot Roombas. Because she talked about every day she got tired of sweeping Cheerios and dog hair. And it's a robotic vacuum that goes around the house and does everyday cleaning. You can't just only do that and get all the dirt out. But you pay for that convenience, don't you? So we don't love money, we love what money can do for us. We love the comfort money can bring. When we're sick, we go to the doctor. The doctor gives us medicine and the medicine makes us better. But oh, does that doctor cost money? If the doctor didn't cost money, we wouldn't have to pay insurance. And oh, does that medicine cost money? Oh, but we're grateful for that medicine, are we not? We love the comfort of having a little bit more in our bank account than what we need for the month. Just the comfort of knowing that if something goes wrong, there's a little bit extra. That's comfort. That helps a guy like me sleep a little better at night. I'm not rich by any stretch of the imagination, and we don't always have more money in the bank account than what we're getting paid that week. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. See? You're welcome. I'm letting you off the hook. I give you a glimpse into our finances and you don't give me a glimpse into yours. See how unfair it is to be a preacher? But boy, when it's there, it helps me sleep at night because the comfort that it brings. There's comfort in knowing that someday when I retire, that I don't have to depend on Social Security, that I don't have to depend on the Church of the Nazarene to support me. I know that over time there's been money put in and that someday, hopefully, I get to retire. There'll be some money. There's comfort that money can bring. There's convenience that money can bring. And oh, there's some comedy money can bring. I have to stay with the C's. Catch it? Money can buy a lot of fun. Going traveling, going on vacation. We were talking about that this morning, weren't we? I don't think Ryan gave enough credit to his mom and dad for the trip that he took them on, so I was razzing him just a little bit. Sorry, Ryan. But oh, if you have enough money, you can have a lot of fun. Even if you have a little money, sometimes you can have the best of fun. That's really the good fun. But we love not money, but what money can do. But in order to help us understand why we should keep our lives free from the love of money, let's go to the flip side of the coin. Pun intended. Let's be reminded of what money can't do. Money cannot replace our spouse. Money cannot replace our family. So if we lose our marriage and or our kids in pursuit of money, we'll never get them back. Money cannot satisfy the soul. This is what I'm learning as a parent. Money cannot replace the memories I can make with my kid. Because she is only that age, and she's at that age where she's growing so fast that it feels like I'm already behind in the moment. Because she's changing as I'm watching it. But our kids only are in that stage, our grandkids are only in that stage for so long, we can't buy time. When we're young, we wish we were older, and when we're older, we wish we were young. We always wish for the next phase when we're in this phase, but once we're out of this phase, we don't get it back and money can't bring it back. Money cannot satisfy the soul. Money can't buy our way into eternity. The church tried that, called indulgences, and a guy by the name of Martin Luther really set them off, and that's why you're in a Protestant church today and not in a Catholic church today. Oh. Hey, we're all part of God's family, but it was tried to set up where money bought your way into eternity, and that doesn't work. And let me just say this, money can prolong us from the grave, but money cannot prevent us from the grave. Let us be reminded, all we're doing with medicine is we're prolonging what will come to every human soul. What good is it for man or woman to gain the whole world and forfeit their soul? So if you take the pros list of what money can do versus the cons list of what money can't do, is money really worth loving? Because what money can't do for us is far greater than the things that it can do for us. Therefore, when we realize that there's no need to love money or what money can do, we can enjoy those things, but it should not become the obsession of our life. Be content with what you have. The idea of contentment here is sufficiency, not capacity. It's having enough, but not having more than enough. Oh boy, it's going to get thick in here. It's the understanding that when we pray the Lord's Prayer, give us tomorrow's bread. Give us this day our daily bread. Give us enough for today, but what we say is give us enough for tomorrow. It was helping the Hebrews. They would have understood this very well because they would have gone back to when great, 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 a lot of greats, grandma and grandpa were in the wilderness. And they didn't have any food, and every day God sent bread down for them. And they had enough for the day, but they did not have enough for tomorrow. So there is sufficiency for the need, but there is not an abundance for security. Ooh. And so when there's room, when we don't have more than enough, there's room in our life to get bored. And when we have enough, but not more than enough, guess what we start to do? Okay, I'll say it. This is what I do. I start comparing myself to others who I think we're close to, but has a little bit more than me. My father-in-law is one of the best men that I know. And every time I get to be with him, my respect for him grows more and more. What's interesting is that if people saw him or saw different things, they would not think that of him. He's intimidating, but he has such a soft heart. Here's what I love the most about my father-in-law. He is a simple, simple man. In fact, he would be a great preacher because he would keep it short. He's just simple. In fact, if we want to talk about learning to be content, keep life simple. And he does. So he has had a flip phone for the duration of his cell phone career. Some of you are going, what's that? Yeah, when they went to update the phone, he's on his brother's plan through work, and he asked him, do you have any flip phones? And they said, we haven't had those in years, sir. In fact, the first time when Sarah was still at home and she was a teenager, just got her phone, he was leaving on a motorcycle ride and didn't get a chance to say bye, so she texted him, I love you. He called his wife, he calls her Pat, he said, Pat, somebody loves me. There's these words on a screen. That's called a text message. Now, this was many years ago, but this is still accurate. This week, when he got a new phone, he got an iPhone 10. And I was there. The Lord still shines on me. Because I was there when it got delivered to him. And I thought, this is the greatest moment of my life. But he was showing me all the features of the iPhone 10. And his brother was trying to show him. And I thought for a moment, this is in fact the blind trying to lead the blind. Neither one have any idea how to use it. And the truth is, it's so much. I have an iPhone 6. I mean, it's 4 years old or something, and it's so outdated, I don't know how to use the new ones. But he was showing me how you can put your phone and it will measure distance. And I thought, oh yeah. You can use it as a level, to level a picture. And I thought, all these features. Now let me tell you something. I never had any interest in the brand new iPhone until my father-in-law got one. And I thought, here's a guy who would be happy with a flip phone. Shouldn't the Lord bless me, who at least can operate the thing, with the brand new iPhone? You see, we start comparing ourselves to people who have more than us, especially when we think we're more deserving. Especially when we think we would do differently if it was ours than if it were theirs. That's called entitlement. We often compare ourselves to people, oh, we would never admit this, but we deem them to be beneath us. And when they get something we want, we think, if they have it, I deserve it too. It's another form of entitlement. But here's another one. What about when someone who is our age experiences something in our life that we think, I'm smart enough for that promotion. We want it to be equal. That's called it equality. I'm hearing all of the conversation that's happening in our culture all over comparison. Can I help us learning to be content and not compare? I noticed this. Sarah's SUV, when we go to the gas station, it holds about 12 gallons. So it's probably a 14 or 15 gallon tank, but you know how it is. There's always room unless some of you let your light shine. And it's really annoying if you're driving very far. Now, when I take my Ford 1990 F-150 that I mow in to the gas station, I have two tanks. I can hold 36 gallons almost of gas. And I was thinking, if the RAV4, because it's parked on one side of the garage, and my F-150 is parked on the other side of the garage, and yes, the poor Camry has to sit out because it's rubbish compared to my treasure, understand? They had a conversation. The RAV4 would be jealous because it would say the Ford has so much more than what it has. It has 36 gallons of gas and I only have 12. Let's think about this. But the purpose of a RAV4 is to take someone's with them when they go. The purpose of my truck, it's a single cab, so there's not room for someone's to go. It's to haul some things with me. Understand, both will get you to the same place. But the RAV4 can get there more efficiently because it has a different purpose. My truck will use a lot more gas getting there because it has to pull something to help us there. So it has a different purpose. Therefore, it has a different capacity. Oh, you're not seeing it yet. when we look and compare ourselves to other people who have more than us, maybe they have a different purpose than you. And so it could be that you can do more with what you have, and they need more to accomplish what they have. So it's not about capacity, it's about purpose. So be content, not just in what you have, but I would say be content in who God has created us to be. Because when we are fulfilling the purpose God has placed upon our life, we're not comparing to other people. We celebrate when other people get what we want. And we just think, I hope to be there someday. But I'm going to celebrate them along the way. It's not comparison. You know what? I am thrilled to watch my father-in-law operate an iPhone 10. Here's a man who never buys anything new or over-the-top extravagant. I am extremely, and I have a lot of fun watching. But what I learned is, it's not about comparing to other people. We have a different purpose and therefore a different capacity. So how do we find contentment? Contentment is the sweet spot between our capacity and our comfort. I got a visual to help. So in order to be content, we have enough, but we do not operate at capacity. There's not more than enough. But I realize this. Some of us have been so content for so long, we've grown comfortable or we've grown complacent. So contentment is the pursuit of more, but being comfortable if we never achieve it. Let me help us think through this. Too many car illustrations, too many personal illustrations, so I apologize in advance. A few weeks ago, I was driving down Lincoln Avenue. I looked to the left-hand side of the road, and there it sat. A 2000 Dodge Ram, black, shining, all clean, with a little bit of gray silver right down the bottom. Now, I'm a simple man. That's a 19-year-old truck, and somehow I fell in love with that thing. I didn't think much of it. I just thought, that's a good-looking truck. We were gone, and then last week I saw it again. Didn't think much of it. And then this week, something occurred. Maybe it's online for sale. And I started looking at it. Has 120,000 miles on it. My car has 192. And here's just my thought process. I'm probably not going to buy the thing. But here, a decision. When you come to a decision, this is an insignificant one, but I thought this helps me understand. If all I do is keep driving my car and I never think ahead to the future, eventually a repair will come that will cost more than the car's worth. At which point, you lose all value in the car because you can't sell it for anything. And it's not worth repairing, so you start over. So if I do nothing ever about my car, comfort will kill me. It will cost me. But at the same time, if I just decided, it's time to go get another car and I just go trade it in on a brand new one, we are maxed out capacity financially. And not just financially, this boy is going to be stressed. Emotionally, that's going to affect our marriage. That's going to affect how everything is in the house because you go to capacity. So the question is, because here's the thing, if I don't buy the truck, and I don't think I will, the only way I would do it is if I could sell my car for relatively close to what I could buy it for. So you kind of even this thing out. But if I don't get the truck, I'm not shopping for another truck. It was just an opportunity I saw that I happened to like. So here's what you do. You pursue more, but you're comfortable if more doesn't happen. If God says no, because I'm praying about it, because I'm being like a 15-year-old boy who sees a toy I want. And I can justify if I play my language right. You know how it goes. If I never get it, I'm okay. Boy, hear me. This is where I live in the life of the church. I love our church. I love our people. And I love our God.
And I love our God because He's always doing more. He's always operating in tomorrow, even though He only gives us enough for today. So we constantly have to be pursuing the more He's calling us to. But if we never achieve the more He's called us to, we have to be comfortable with where we're at. Contentment. Oh, I think that can help somebody, surely, somewhere, at some point in life, when we think about pursue the more. And sometimes God will say yes. A lot of times there'll be a no, and if we never get there, we're comfortable. I think this is why we don't pray big prayers. This is why it's hard when we pray for people to get healed and they don't get healed. Because we pursued the more and He said no. So we stop praying. The response is not on us. Contentment is about pursuing the more, trusting God with the more, and saying, but God, if you never do it, I'm content with who you are. How do you do that, preacher? Thanks for asking. I find it interesting that the writer of Hebrews doesn't do a mic drop, he does a promise drop. It's a strange place to be talking about money. Keep your lives free from the love of money. Be content with what you have, for God has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. I might put that someplace else, like in your topic about marriage there. That would be helpful, wouldn't it? But he does it in money. And when the Hebrews heard it, they would have gone back in time and thought about the first time that showed up in Scripture. Moses was on his way out, literally. And he goes before the people. He says, be strong and courageous, follow Joshua, for the Lord will never leave you nor forsake you. Then he brought Joshua to the side. He said, be strong and courageous, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And then in Joshua 1, it repeats again. Joshua is getting ready to lead the people in the promised land. God pulls him aside. He says, again, remember, third time's the charm. Be strong and courageous, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you. In other words, at the moment that the people were pursuing God's more for them, there was a promise that God would be with them. I was mowing a yard this week. New customer, I've only mowed it twice. And I kept hearing a whistling. Kept mowing. What is going on? Finally, I looked up. There's a security camera on the corner of the house that whistles when you get close to it. And a light goes off. And I knew they weren't home because he texted me and said, hey, I'm sorry I'm not home. You know, we'll catch up later. I said, that's fine. So I knew they weren't home. And I thought, what's the purpose of the whistle? The purpose of the whistle is to let the person know that even though I'm not present right now, I'm still watching you. You see it? Even though you don't think I'm present, I'm still watching you. If I could sing, I'd burst into song. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He's watching me. So don't worry about tomorrow, for it has enough troubles of its own. But just remember that He is watching you. Don't worry about what you will eat tomorrow. For the birds of the air, they don't have barns which they store up grains. I take care of them, and because I'm watching them and provide for them, no, I'm watching you and will provide for you. Don't worry about what you're going to wear, for surely the flowers are more beautiful than Solomon's temple. And if I've clothed them, I'm going to clothe you. I just want you to know God's watching you. You may feel like your bank account is empty, and it might be in the negative. God is watching you. God will provide. God will make a way. He will never leave you. He will never forsake you. You may be in darkness in your relationship. God sees the darkness, and the light is coming. You can be content with where you are because you are not alone. God is watching you. And therefore be confident. You see, it's God's job to be present. It's our job to be confident in who He is. And our confidence says, I will not fear. I think it's a little bit of attitude. What can anyone do to me? Really? If God is with me, if God is providing for me, then what can anyone take from me that matters? Because here's the true place of contentment. God, you gave me a job before I was ready. So if I lose that job, but I have you, I have enough. P.S. That's how I feel about this job. He gave it before I was ready. I'm still not ready most days. But God, you gave it, and therefore it's yours. So if there's ever a day where I'm no longer qualified, if there's ever a day where I'm not supposed to be doing it, my identity cannot be in my job. My identity is in who you are. So if you take it, if I'm physically unable to do it, God, I'll have enough. God, when we were starting to look for a house, you provided a house that I never would have dreamed of. It was beyond my imagination. It's not a mansion to anybody else, but it still feels like that to me. And God, if I ever lose that house because I lost that job, but I have you, you're more than enough. God, you gave us a daughter when doctors said there might be a chance we couldn't have children. Oh, this is a hard one. I don't say it lightly. But God, if I ever don't have her, if I ever don't have my wife, if I ever lose all my friends and family, but I have you, God, I have more than enough. You are the giver of it all. Therefore, you hold ownership right to it all. And I will be confident because I know that surely I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Because I know that nothing formed against us will stand. Because I know the one who was present in death also overcame death and is present in our victory in the resurrection. So I know that no matter what I face it with confidence. For my God is enough. My God is victorious. We don't have to worry because He's enough. We don't have to fear because He's enough. We don't have to work and toil our lives away trying to provide what we can't do anyway because He is enough. And He never lets go. Praise God.